lot of fun putting this talk together today. Over the last week, I had a real privilege of interviewing a couple of people who've been at this a little bit. I've been at this game for quite a long time, over 20 years myself, and we always have mentors and we always have people who have been doing it longer and better or in deeper areas. And shamanism is an extremely broad field. So I had the privilege of interviewing some other people who've been doing it for a little bit longer to kind of check my ideas against what some of these other people are, what they think about this topic. And they were happy to contribute, and I found a lot of convergence. So that was also really wonderful to experience. What we're going to do today is, I think I covered this in the email invitation, actually. What is shamanism? Just so we're all on the same page about that. There's a lot of people who don't really know what that means, and there's really a lot of different types of shamans, depending on the culture they come from. And obviously, talking about the perspective on addiction and mental illness, we'll go into some of the shamans' toolkits and the protocols we use, and we'll also talk about how shamanism and shamanic techniques and protocols can interface with the counseling role, because there's a really, really good collaboration there. So in traditional times, before white people really came around that much, the shamanic role was very common in all indigenous tribes, all indigenous societies around the world. So this is not just where you might think it might be Native American or natives in South America. It's really all over the world. And there's a specific role for this. This is like the doctor of the community. This is what people, if they've got pretty much anything wrong with them, whether it's mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual, they will go in to the fix-it person in their community, which is the shaman. So there's a community context for the clients in this case. They know everybody in the community. The community knows what's up with them. They know how the community is influencing them. There's a safety net, if you will, from the community perspective that doesn't exist in a lot of cases in our Western society. And the role is understood. Everybody knows why you'd want to go to, like, when you've got something that ails you that the shaman can fix. In our society, we don't always know what the shaman works on and what they don't. And the mentorship is built in. Shamans are generally, the information is cascading through the generations, and talented individuals in those communities are placed with the shaman for training at a very, very young age. So by the age of 30, they may have already been studying for 20 years. And they're like, you meet this young person and you recognize that they have this power in them. It's because they've been on their path, they've been studying for a really long time. And I wanted to say something here too. I recently had the awareness created for me. We also romanticize a little bit about this role in other cultures, and historically this role is also the witch doctor, the sorcerer. So there are shamans that practice both, let's say, positive work and negative work, and it could be the same person. And it could be based on their morals and belief systems from within their own context in their own society, that it's okay to curse somebody when they do something like that. Or it's okay to curse somebody in the other tribe, right? So that's different from the morals and values that people I know practice. And so comparing white, I just said white shamans in the US, I'm so aware of my whiteness in this role. And all the people I know in this town who practice shamanism, we're all like really conscious about our whiteness. And it's really on the outside, because on the inside we feel pretty indigenous. I want to say that our skill sets vary, our training varies. What's important to know if you're seeking a shaman is to find out what kind of training they've had, how long they've been doing this, what frame of reference are they coming from. And are they coming from a really clear and clean, loving place, or if they kind of dabble in some of those things that we don't want to know about? We have a big concern. Part of the reason why I recognize and notice my whiteness so much is I have a tremendous amount of respect for these tribal traditions that have been going on for thousands of years, way, way before I ever came around. And even though I'm aware that I have a soul's lineage in these types of traditions, it's not the same as growing up in that tribe. I myself and the people I know who practice shamanism here, we don't actually feel comfortable titling ourselves that way. We don't use the title. I don't call myself a shaman. If other people recognize my skill set and they place me in that context and they call me that, you know, I'm not gonna freak out about it. The reason I don't use it is because I have tremendous respect for this tribal traditions. And I'm not appropriating culture. I'm learning from them and also introducing some of my own eclectic spiritual traditions and spiritual exposures and tools. So that's a benefit of some of the shamans in this country, is that we have exposure to more tools in this realm that we can use with clients. And I think I want to put this last little message on here. Sometimes people think of shamanism as like that cute little, oh, that's kind of cute. Wow, you do shamanic stuff, you know, and people get really curious and they think it's kind of cute and funny. For us, it's serious business. It's actually real. Like, we spend as much time thinking about our career as anybody else in this country thinks about their career. I feel like I'm on the MD track, and it's in the energy world. I do psychic surgery. I study about psychic surgery. It's serious business to me. All right, so I want to go in, talk about how shamans perceive the term addiction, right? I'm in a recovery center. The context here is chemical addiction, substance abuse, and I want to broaden that definition to addiction being anything where you're kind of chasing it. Like, I need some comfort. I don't really want to think about those feelings. This is such a classic time of year, right? We're around people, like family members that we really only see during the holidays, and there's a reason for that. And we get around those people, and we kind of like eat a little bit more. Maybe for those of us who drink, we might drink a little bit more because there's some family dynamics that make us uncomfortable. We don't want to feel that discomfort, and so we comfort ourselves with shopping, sex, love, any kind of thing. Anytime you are comforting yourself, chasing it, and not paying attention to the thing that's chasing you towards that, that's what I call an addictive dynamic. It's an imbalance amongst the mental, emotional, spiritual, and physical realms. And we see this as tangled up energy. When we look at someone's energy who's got an addiction, we see these, like, the energy just doesn't run clear and clean. And that's when we get done with our work and our job at the end of a client session, the energy's been straightened out and it runs, and that person has more energy, they feel more potent in their life, and they feel more successful, and that's because the energy is running clean and clear through their system. It's not tangled up. And here's a couple of things that I'm going to go into a little bit more as I talk about the toolkit. We all know this is a pretty esoteric topic. We know this is weird stuff for a lot of people here. I have very little exposure to how shamans see things, and so that's why this topic's interesting. I'm going to talk about things like losing your soul's essence, and I'm going to talk about what soul lineage and family lineage, how these things play in. When we have a trauma, a bunch of us just kind of like goes and gets really, really small. And that, like, depending on when that trauma happens, if you're really young, it can create all these sort of fracture lines. And as counselors and psychologists, we see those as like inner child work, for example. We see that a person is operating as a young, you know, 2, 3, 5-year-old in certain circumstances, really not functioning for them. That's because that part of them froze up, their development froze at that time. We see that in an energetic perspective where the energy got bound up in the physical, emotional, and spiritual aspects in that time period, and now that energy is not accessible to them. So in the same way that counselors do inner child work to grow up that inner child, get them comfortable being in the adult world, we follow a very similar trajectory. We just do it in a little bit different way. There's some genetics related to family lineage that might result in addictions. A family that's been addicted to things, you know, adult children of alcoholics, all that stuff snowballs into the present day person sitting in front of you. And I think people can kind of understand that from a genetic perspective. There are other aspects of family lineage that can carry into the person from a spiritual perspective that we also look at sometimes. And then we see things at a soul level too. Souls having repeated lifetime experiences. I'm having maybe different angles of the same experience. And then sometimes the soul has really completed those lessons and they haven't really moved on. And in this time right now, we can say bye-bye to all those lessons. And sometimes that's when you get like a huge bump when you unravel things at the soul level. All right. Mental illness, again, a lot of mental illness is caused by a trauma that happened that binds somebody up, and people have certain responses to that. They might dissociate, they might check out. That's another type of soul loss. So a lot of mental illness can actually be corrected in shamanic practices, and I'll go into this later. This is another great area where the shamans and counselors can partner. And then spiritual attack, another thing we don't really like to think about. So in the traditional Western perspective, there is nothing that's, there. Beings don't exist, spirits don't exist, those energies don't bombard me and hurt me. I beg to differ, and Carrie does too. These things happen all the time. There is an unseen world that can influence us to greater or lesser degrees, depending on how sensitive we are. People that have what we might call, what are traditionally called mental illnesses, so they hear voices, they hear things from a spirit mediumship perspective, and that's one of my toolkits, is they have like these open gates in them where the spirits just kind of come through, and they are person A in 1 minute, and then something triggers them, the spirit comes in, and then now they're person B. And so that's a shamanic perspective on something like psychosis. And then you got folks who have like really profound psychic skills and abilities, and they're highly, highly empathic, highly, highly sensitive. And if that's not a reason to run towards and comfort and inoculation, like if you can't shut it off and you're just constantly inundated with massive quantities of information that you don't really care to know, I don't want to know what that person's thinking over there. I don't want to know what that conversation is over there across the room. That is that's a very stressful situation for some people. Again, it's a spiritual cause, and some mentoring can help that person manage those talents, and they were given them for a reason, like let's bring out the higher purpose behind those talents. Once in a while, and I talked with, and I kind of checked in with the people I interviewed with, there's a point at which the shaman feels like there might be an actual physical issue in the brain, and those might be circumstances that most of us would refer out. There's one lady I interviewed who has the skill sets to handle those types of issues too. She's just profound. Okay, so shamanic protocols. I'm a big fan of the intake, and the other folks I talked to are as well. We want to know if you've been diagnosed with any kind of mental disorders, if you're on any kind of medications right now, and we want to know the degree and severity of the types of traumas that you know about. And this plays in, cascading some information forward, this plays into whether they're at a point in their lives and their personal growth and development where they can benefit from shamanism. So we're looking for fit here. And this goes back to also whether what the skill set is of that shaman and their particular specialties. And the shaman will be able to go through an intake, have a brief conversation, and go, yeah, I think let's go ahead and start with a session or two and see if this is effective for you. Let's try it. And if it is, we'll get into a rhythm with it. And if it's not, we'll move on with each other. Here's a big difference. So shamans employ skills that are would be more, in the Western mind, more similar to what psychics do and what channels do. So we work with a lot of spirit guides and helpers, and we open ourselves up. So when we have a client in front of us, we are actually operating with a lot of divine inspiration. And it's our job to be able to listen, interpret, really actually tremendous amounts of translation and interpretation of the information that we're getting about the client. And we may be getting information in many, many different ways. And then we compile all of that and use guidance to create a protocol for that client. Everything is a very specific case-by-case basis. And I have a case study toward the end of the slide deck, and I bet Gary has some really cool ones too, that will just demonstrate how different the symptom from the cure can be. And this is so interesting, and that's a difference from counseling as well, because counselors, there's a lot of patterns that people fall into, and there's always the outlier cases. In fact, shamanism is a great, you might want to try shamanism for one of your clients that have outlier, you know, weird extra stuff going on. For the most part, a lot of traditional counseling follows some similar patterns. You know, you've seen a lot of this stuff. And we have patterns too. And then there's stuff that we get a lot of weird stuff. And we're good at the weird stuff. And we like the weird stuff. We're really driven to look for the root cause. And, you know, going back to an addictive behavior, the addictive behavior is going into a traumatic event that happened in that person's time. I specifically, when I'm seeing, I will often see a timeline with a client, and I'll see what happened more recently, and then I'll see maybe where the trauma happened in this particular lifetime, and then I may see a further cause back in a past life, for example. So I always go back up the timeline to the very first time that person had that type of experience, or that soul had that type of experience, and carry on from there. I'm always going back to the very furthest back root cause, and I don't assume it's in this lifetime at all. And quick fix, not quick fix. Just like regular counseling, people might come in for a specific event in their life. I just went through a breakup. I want to learn everything I can about that experience and heal myself and move on. That's a short-term counseling duration. They need something for a period of time. And then there's other things like the traumas that we're talking about. As you all know, these are, depending on the age that someone had the trauma, it creates that splintering effect throughout their life, and each one of those broken pieces that has now grown up and developed itself in the broken way, all of those need to be addressed. And that can be a layer by layer process over time. People make incremental progress. I am a big fan of giving clients homework, and the folks I talked to were also in that part. We want to see partnership. We want to see the client. I am not the person to come to if you want me to just fix everything in your world. Like, I'm not interested in that, and it's a in fact, I don't feel effective that way. I ask the client to collaborate with me in their own personal growth process. I think that's essential for them to get results, especially lasting results. And then I also wanted to say that we do a lot of work on the floor. And that's because we draw energy and power from the earth. And groundedness is a huge tool in our toolkit that we use with our clients. So we oftentimes sit on the earth quite a bit. That's interesting. Okay. I don't know why my screen did that. All right. One of my interviewees really emphasized the importance of community in a person's healing process. We're such a disconnected society here in Western society. A lot of times we just don't get together. We don't feel like there's any kind of a safety net around us. And it's really challenging. And I think this is kind of a plague in our society in particular. So I wanted to say, going back to some of those indigenous practices, yeah, we do. We create community around people whenever we possibly can. That's something Gary's been masterful at here in Austin. He's got a nice big group of people, and it's a safety net. So there's guided journeys that happen in a group setting where everyone goes on the same journey with their own personal experience. Drum circles are another community experience. So here are a couple of protocols, and we've talked about intake and identification already. Soul retrieval. So I talked about the loss of soul essence. And this is when you have a trauma, then a part of you checks out. You're like, it ain't safe for me to be here anymore. And some of your energy just goes away. So it's dissociative in a slightly different way, not specifically psychological. This is a spiritual loss. you're not able to be fully present anymore. And again, without all of your energy here in present time, you are not going to be successful in your life. So we have several different techniques to use for soul retrieval. One of them is a journey, a shamanic journey style. Another one is the shaman goes and finds the lost piece on behalf of that person and brings it back for them. And another one is what I already mentioned. The shaman will travel back in time to find where it is, heal it, and bring it back to present time. Past life regression, not all of us do this. Most of us don't do this as a starting place. So there are people out there, psychics, who can answer questions about past lives if you want. Everybody was Cleopatra, actually. Everybody was King Arthur. It's funny how many stories there are about royalty and that kind of thing. We are all majestic in our own way. So past life regression for me and for the folks I talked with is really called for when it's called for. We don't just do it for any old reason. And in fact, it's if clients get really, really interested in finding out so much about their past lives and they kind of aren't so interested in some of the other aspects of healing, then that's a form of spiritual bypassing. They're really jumping over. It's another form of addiction, actually. They're jumping over what they really need to be paying attention to because it's not so fun and happy there, to the glory of the beauty of the spiritual connection and, oh, my past lives. Oh, isn't that cool? So we don't do that very often. Entity removal. I want to tell a little bit about why we do this and what the benefits are. As I mentioned, we are under the influence of lots of energies that we don't necessarily perceive, and that's fine and that's great, and you don't really want to perceive all of them anyway, and they don't really slow you down that much, mostly. When you have a trauma, sometimes people can come up with a belief system at that trauma. Let's say a child was hit by a male person in their life, and they're like, whoa, and it kind of, you know, it shocked them, created a shockwave, it was a trauma. And then because of that, they're like, oh, men are bad. I'm not getting around men anymore. And then, so anytime a man comes around, you shrink. And then now you're an adult. And now you are single. And you are a woman and you can't find any good men. The good men don't come around you. So there's a belief system ramification from that original trauma. Belief system operates like a request to the divine. I think all men are bad. The divine's like, oh, okay, great. I'll make sure that happens for you. So sometimes this happens. Sometimes this belief system is fulfilled as an entity coming in to do a job. So the entity comes in and just keeps all the good men away from you. So is it an attacker or is it an entity that came in as a result of an unconscious prayer? So we make unconscious prayers, I can't even tell you, a jillion times a day, probably. And we especially make lots and lots of these when we're children, and then we grow up with these, and these entities continue to do their job. And then when you come to a shaman and you say, man, I am so sick of only the bad men coming around me, is there some way we can shake this loose? And we go back to the root cause, and we find the wound, we heal the wound, and there's an entity standing there sometimes. So we heal the entity, and we say, thank you so much for playing your job. You did a great job, and your job's now done. And we send you back home to be redeployed to somebody else. And that can clients can see tremendous shifts from this type of entity removal. Energy healing and curse breaking. Okay. So I've referred to curses a little bit. And curses sound like, ooh, wow, only a sorcerer would do that. Oh, my God. I got attacked. It's not really quite like that. We curse ourselves a lot, too. In the same exact scenario I just talked about, in that trauma, your energy can get really convoluted and bound up. And I have an even juicier story about curses in the case study in a minute. Your energy gets really, really bound up and tangled up and inaccessible to you. That is a form of a curse. You don't have access to all of that energy. That energy doesn't freely flow and move. It's bound up. It's unusable. And so that's a form of a curse. How do curses happen? Happen from all different kinds of traumas. And yeah, they might be from sorcery. It's maybe 10 or 15% of the cases are from something like that, in my experience. So energy healing and untangling is a huge part of what we do. We find where these binds are, and we employ tools to release them. And then we also mentor and coach our clients in a lot of ways. You operated in the world like this. You thought all men were bad. What if you started making the assumption that all men were good? We've just shifted you. We've gotten rid of the being that was keeping all the good men away from you. Now it's up to you, client. This is your homework. All men are good now. You're going to receive good men in your life. They're going to look really weird and foreign to you, so recognize them when they come in. How are the protocols different with mental illness? So in addition, you know, we want to know why so many spirits are coming in. We want to know why do you have these holes in you that the spirits just keep flying through and attacking people through you in your life, you know, in a schizophrenic case. A lot of times we can close up those holes, and we can coach on their psychic ability and help them manage that talent and bring it into fruition. And we can also say, you know what, you are probably in for a lifetime of a certain degree of symptoms from that trauma. What your job is to not pay so much attention to them. Your job is to manage those symptoms, to believe that you can overcome, and that you can navigate, and you can have a successful, happy life, even though that happened to you, even though you have some of these symptoms. Just don't let them get the best of you. So we support our clients in that way. And I've already referred to this. We really like to have partnerships with, I have a counselor, a couple counselors that I refer to. We collaborate in certain cases. Sometimes we've shared clients. And I find that's very, very beneficial to me and the client. They have that security of somebody in the real world with a license that gives them a certain type of comfort and a certain really important skill set. And then they've got the woo-woo person when they feel like they have some spiritual imbalances too that they need help with. So I'm going to go next into a little bit deeper on what some of these tools are that we use. I'm going to call it out. We use some altered states of consciousness. A lot of shamans around the world will get into an altered state of consciousness. We either learn tools to shift ourselves in the moment with the client. We call upon guides. The guides may actually come inside us or around us and shift our perspective. Drumming. All humans are wired for 170 beats a minute. If you beat on a drum for 170 beats a minute, you will go into an altered state of consciousness. And we also sometimes use plant medicines that are psychedelic. And we can, from those plant medicines, which are common, again, in many different parts of the world, it might be mushrooms, it might be ayahuasca, many other substances and plants, this is kind of like how we get our college education. It's how we take classes sometimes. We go, we solve problems, we go and get greater information than what we might have in our current toolkit. We may go and meet new guides that we need to work with here with our clients. So we go and we travel to these other realms and we come back here with that information. So that's how we get our PDUs sometimes. So we also call upon spirit guides and animals. In my experience, as we practice and as we go through our direction in life as shamans and as we develop on this path, new guides arrive, depending on a new area that we're working with. When I started working with people in the recovery community, White Eagle partnered with me. It was very, very profound to see things from White Eagle's perspective, and White Eagle has an extremely pristine clarity and very high vibrational energy that allows me to be and stay in the light and be the light in the darkness for people that are having some darker times. Sacred herbs and plants, I mentioned that. A lot of shamans in indigenous tribes are trained in herbalism as well. In our culture here, we may not have that much time to study absolutely everything that you might if you were in a tribal context. So yeah, we get a little jealous sometimes. And power objects as well, maybe a particular stone, a rock, a feather. These objects can either be imbued by spirit with special powers or properties, or it may be a feather of an eagle that's been handed down through the generations. These objects have a tremendous amount of power, and all of these tools are used to shift energy in our clients. We've talked about everything that we work with is seen as an energetic imbalance, and we go in and work on the energetic levels. So we use a lot of different kinds of tools to do that. All right, I'm going to go into a case study now. And this client of mine had had back pain for, I don't know, like 15 or 20 years. And he was, you know, had oftentimes had to take pain medication. He also had bouts of depression and alcohol. And it took a couple of sessions. And what came out was that this particular person, he's aware. So some people come to you and their deal is that they've signed up for a lot of work in this lifetime, a lot of karma. So we've got a lot of clients are just powering through lifetimes of stuff, whereas, you know, maybe in earlier generations they would take a few lifetimes to work that out. Now people are stacking it. And this guy, long, long, long time ago, it was like looking down a tunnel, and I could see this tribe had sent him to the future. And they were suffering, like they had no crops, there was no water, they were all super skinny, and they said, "You are our hope." And they did a huge ritual, and they put all of their hopes for the future of their survival into him, and they basically sent him into the future in order to retrieve tools and skills and whatever was needed to bring those resources back to that tribe so that they could survive, so that they could carry on. So this was a karmic burden that he was carrying, and he wore it right here in his back, and this was a really complicated situation to unravel. I had to ask, like, the tribe was long gone, and there was nothing really we could do for that tribe. And I checked about that. I looked into that. So I prayed for all the members of those of the tribe who had been harmed, who had died, and that, and I prayed for the lost knowledge and all of that. And when that had all been forgiven, then I was able to start to unravel the prayers and the intentions and hopes that they had placed on him. Eventually, through a couple of sessions, we were able to unravel all of that, and then his back really, really improved. So I wanted to bring this particular case study out, both because this is like, wow, our jobs are really freaking cool, y'all, and also how different the symptoms from the cause can be. I mean, what? So people find the sessions pretty fascinating, and then when they get results, they're like, I never would have known that. All right, so I'm going to start wrapping up here and talking about the shaman versus counselor and psychologist. So we talked about how these traumas can be multifaceted and that longer-term care can be indicated. One of the ladies I talked to has been working with somebody, one of her clients, for 17 years, just continuing to peel back layers. And that's a beautiful, beautiful long-term relationship. And then we also sometimes have the quick hit thing. Like and it really depends, in my experience, on how long somebody's had the issue for. If they've had the issue their whole entire life, you know it's going to be a longer-term resolution. And if they've had the issue for only, you know, a few months or to a few years, it's not going to be as many sessions to unravel that, because the energy gets entrenched over time. And this has a lot to do with just the psychology of our brains. Our brains actually, you know, create myelin sheaths to get like the happy trail, so we don't have to think about things so much. It's really a laziness in our brain in a way, and it's a survival function. If you haven't entrenched your belief system, maybe for only a few months or years, then it's a lot easier to unravel that. So I forgot to put it on a slide. A lot of what shamanic work does is create more elasticity in the mind. So the psychology actually begins to loosen up because of the energy work. And with that, as long as the client is diligent in pursuing their new path and staying on their new path, and we enable them with tools and coaching to do that, they really can make a dramatic shift, and they can maintain that shift. And that's because we loosen stuff up. I was in, I had therapy for a year, and it was with a woman who was one of these majorly talented people who had the LPC background, the PhD, and profound numbers of years doing shamanic practice. I went to her every 2 weeks, And every 2 weeks, I had something that was up for me. Now I feel disconnected. I sit in a table with people, and I don't feel like I'm in the circle. I feel like I'm, you know, I'm disconnected, very disconnected. Or I'd have other types of symptoms. I'd go with her and do a shamanic journey. I'd go back and find that piece of, you know, whatever it was that caused that, bring it all back. And I never had to deal with that issue again. Like, it was over and done. So this is a little bit of a difference sometimes with traditional counseling, where I talk about my disconnectedness with a counselor, and I come to understand it from a mental and maybe emotional perspective. What is happening is that sometimes the physical and spiritual levels are not getting addressed in traditional counseling, and that's why we make such good partners. So if you have clients in as counselors, if you have clients who are not really progressing very quickly or responding to treatment very well, they're not staying on track, their progress is very slow, very, very incremental, then they may be a good candidate to refer to a shaman who can maybe give them another little nudge, a little bump, find out some other reason in addition to maybe this lifetime, their experiences in this lifetime, and we can inform each other. A lot of times a shaman will go and find a trauma that happened in at an age of youth, maybe 1, 2, 3 years old, even fetal development, that the person couldn't possibly be conscious aware of. And they don't know how to bring it to a counselor. And we may discover that and see that and get them aware of that, and then they can talk to the counselor about, how did that affect my childhood development? Is that why I'm the way I am right now? So there's a lot of reciprocity that can flow back and forth between the two roles. And I like, for clients who can afford to do both at the same time, they're really going to get on the fast track, and they're very compatible. And I like what Gary said too, if they can throw in some body work in there too, super great. The hands-on stuff, disconnecting things from the fascia and the nervous system, then you've unraveled it from all the different levels. And I want to say that, and I kind of mentioned this already, me and some of my compatriots, we like to work with people that have achieved a certain kind of a baseline. So they have expressed interest in their personal growth and development. Maybe they've been at it for a little while. They understand themselves. They're willing and ready to take personal responsibility. And those are the people that we really like to work with, because we know we can make a big difference for them. And the folks that who don't have that kind of makeup, I mean, they're hard for any of us to work with, frankly. Anything we can say and do to get them to take responsibility and be willing to look at their addictions and willing to look at their traumas and their pains, you know, then they can actually get somewhere. And then where I like to refer, and most of the people I talk to, except for Karen Hutchins, who's just so dang experienced, she can handle anything, we like to refer the tough cases of mental illness, or if somebody's having a physical issue that's really urgent right now, go see urgent care. Some of our protocols and practices are going to take a while, and we need people. I had a couple of clients who were really early on in their stability, and stability in detoxing from addiction, physical chemical addiction. Another one was in maybe early 20s and stabilizing on mental health psychological medications. So until the psychological medications have stabilized and you found the right concoction that you feel pretty good most of the time, or your client feels good most of the time, or the physical detox symptoms, until those are stabilized, it's going to be hard for us to, we stabilize, don't get me wrong. We add a lot of grounding and focus and the witnessing that we can do and the heart and profound healing we can do with the heart, it facilitates and helps. However, we use discernment about, this person needs to, they're not really quite ready for me yet. And so we use a lot of discernment. I think that I'm about to wrap up here, and I want to say thank you to the people who contributed to this conversation. Karen Hutchins, I just mentioned, profound healer, able to handle the really, she says she loves the tough cases. Bring it on! So I love that she has that fortitude. And Gary, I really appreciate you being here today. Gary is an author of several books, runs a very large community of people who are all interested in shamanic practices, about 2,500 people in the meetup. He meets every Wednesday. in South Austin for a shamanic journeys in a group setting. He builds community really well. Christina Allen is someone who's been in town for 3 or 4 years. She studied with Villapoda. Am I saying his name right?
Alberto Villoldo.
She studied with Alberto Villoldo and for many, many years. And she also is a psychic. She probably is a psychic, a physicist and a neuroscientist. So I really dig her scientific perspective on all this stuff. And she's still a shaman because she believes in it. And she believes that the movement of energy cures people. And she's got a lot of proof to that. And then a friend of mine, Tex Phoenix, also, who studies in Native American ways. So that's it for my presentation, and I'm open for one or two questions from the stage, and then I want to join you and have our rich discussion that we always have. I've got one over here.
Yes, ma'am. I really like your view that all men are good. I have to agree with that. I'm just kind of curious, what kind of homework do you assign to a client?
Okay.
Just some great examples?
The type of homework that I would assign to a client. So, going back to, I mentioned a lot of material here today. Going back to the elasticity of the brain and the brain's tendency to want to freeze back into its old patterns. The type of homework that I assign will sometimes be coaching and mentoring, like watch your choices. And then the other thing that I will often, for every client in every session, myself personally, I channel an affirmation or two. And the affirmations are like an energy, a homeopathic energy medicine that reinforces the new track that they're on. And it will be something like, it'll be very particular to the issue that we resolved, and it'll be the cure to the issue. It'll be like a really empowered phrase to help them reinforce that. So whenever they have their typical pattern, they can say that instead. And I tell them, write these affirmations on sticky notes and put them all over your life. And say them all the time so that you can reinforce that new groove. Any other questions from the stage? All right, awesome. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak here today to ASCN. And this is a great group of people. I have a tremendous amount of respect for the work we're doing together in the world to be that light in the darkness. And today is solstice. I want to acknowledge we are all being the light in the darkness today, getting filled up with light so that we can give that out to our clients so that they can then ripple that out to the people they know in their lives. So thanks again for the opportunity. Thank you.